Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's begin in Paris, where the corruption trial of a former world athletics chief from Senegal has quickly been adjourned. Lisa Bryant reports from the French capital.
The trial against 86-year-old Lamine Diack has been adjourned until June, following new documents from Senegal concerning testimony from Diack's son and co-defendant. Diack faces up to 10 years in jail and a heavy fine if found guilty for corruption and money laundering following a four-year French investigation. He is accused of accepting millions of dollars in bribes to cover up tests showing extensive doping by Russian athletes during his 16 years as head of the International Association of Athletics Federation, or IAAF, now known as World Athletics. A former mayor of Dakar, Diack is under house arrest in Paris. He denies the charges, as do five other defendants. Among other charges, the prosecution claims Diack received more than $1.5 million in Russian funds to help support his friend Macky Sall's successful 2012 presidential campaign in Senegal. In a 2015 BBC interview, he denied allegations of bribery or extortion or an IAAF cover-up.
I'm convinced I know what is my department. I know how they work very, very hard about the fight against doping, and I didn't see any reason to make a cover-up of a doping case.
Britain's Sebastian Coe replaced Diack as the association's head later that year. The scandal the trial centers on led to a ban against Russian athletes in several international competitions. Russia as a country is still banned from competing in world athletics. One of Diack's sons, Papa Masata Diack, who handled lucrative IAAF contracts, was also to be tried in absentia. He is in Senegal, where authorities have refused to extradite him despite international arrest warrants.
Les enquêteurs français, ils doivent, je pense, faire un effort.
Papa Masata Diack earlier told France's TV5 Monde that French investigators should have made an effort to fly to Dakar and question him there. He was questioned by Senegalese investigators in November. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The countdown continues for the Tokyo Olympics, the year's biggest international sporting event. We're now 192 days away to the multi-sports jamboree in Japan. Nigeria is hoping to bounce back from a disappointing performance at the last Olympics held in Rio de Janeiro in 2016. Team Nigeria tallied only one medal, a bronze in men's football in Brazil. Johnny Igboka is a national coach in jumps and the head coach of athletics in Anambra State in southeast Nigeria. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Coach Igboka was not optimistic about Nigeria winning Olympic medals in athletics.
As it is now, I don't think we have any hope to go there and mess ourselves up, because the problem is on the ground is so large that concentration is not there. The athletes are not well organized and well packaged. Everybody's on their own, trying to make it up, trying to manage. And if you say you bank hope on those abroad without financial support, which is very important to every athlete in the world, I don't think there's any hope at all. If I may say, if Nigeria would just drop this year for this annual Olympics and they go and prepare very well as usual, and there's a hope that we can be better.
The Athletics Federation of Nigeria, AFN, has already rolled out a program that will prepare Nigerian athletes for the Olympic Games. And the program starts from February and then maybe end in June and then straight to the Olympic Games. Are you saying that you don't have hope in this program and that this program will not help the AFN to do well in the Olympic Games?
Well, I'm afraid if the program will run peacefully because of the problem on the ground. Because if you see what happened last Congress, President are here in Anambra doing his own. The other group are in Lagos. The vice is in Lagos doing his own. Abuja, I don't know where he's doing his own. So that shows that the body is divided. And that's the way I believe that they will pull out the athletes. Be divided as well. But I pray it doesn't happen. If it happens, well, we didn't start well. Even if anything goes on, we didn't start well. We only pray. Olympics is not something you say, let's pray that God will help us to run very well. It depends how you prepared. Olympics is not 1 month, 1 year preparation or month preparation. It's years preparation. Had it been that they follow this program of youth games, from that first youth game, 4 years, they are 15 years, you start preparing a 15 years boy to next 4 years Olympics, if he goes there, he will do very well. It will be a surprise to everybody. I won't say that now Nigeria is going there to go and pick gold medals, unless if miracles work. But sometimes Olympics is not for miracles. It's how did you work?
It is on record that you trained a certain 15-year-old girl from Nigeria by the name Ebelechukwu Abapolongo, now Salwa Ednasa, now who competes for Bahrain, who won the gold medal in 400 meters at the World Athletics Championship in Doha, Qatar. Do we have such athletes? Do we have potentials to raise and groom the likes of Salwa Ednasa?
A lot of them. You know, Nigerians are full of talented people. We have billions of them in Nigeria. But the problem is the arrangements, the programs. They don't have any programs. That Nasa got to me by luck, or some of few athletes who are working under me. And most of her group, during that, the time I was handling them, are all superstars anywhere in the world. And most of them are not running for Nigeria. Like the person that took her to Bahrain is also competing for Bahrain. She's number 23 in the world, or 32 in the world. And also, they have another one in Italy who is doing javelin. He's doing very well, twin over 7-something. So there's a lot of them here. But how interest is Nigeria? How are they ready to do the work? I'm doing it alone. I've done it for many years, and I've been achieving results. I've been getting results. It's simple to, and Nigeria is big. Have 3 zones for school sports academy. Then get the best from this after the competition, get the best out of them, and you will send some good qualified coaches to work with them. And they grow them. Give them the best education, give them the best medicals, give them the best food. You will see superstars in the Olympics.
That's Johnny Iboka, a Nigerian national coach in jumps. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye in Auka, Nigeria.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
In pro boxing, Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury are exchanging verbal jabs ahead of their WBC heavyweight title rematch next month in Las Vegas, Nevada. The two fighters held a news conference in Los Angeles to promote their February 22nd showdown. Our VOA boxing fans will remember the first fight between Wilder and Fury in December 2018 ended in a controversial split decision draw after 12 explosive rounds. The result satisfied neither fighter, but left both with their undefeated records intact. In Los Angeles, the WBC champ Wilder said he's eager to face Fury again.
But I can't wait for this fight. This is going to be an exciting fight like it was the first time. I think the controversial decision that the referee gave him, you know, I think it helped it. I helped this out for the second time around. You know, them not wanting the quick rematch. I think it helped this out the second time. Definitely made it bigger. You know, we had 2 warm-ups. Mine was a lot more dangerous than his. You know, he played it safe in the playground. While I went onto the mountaintop and climbed it. 2 different fighters, 2 different times, 2 different paths. One just want to survive me. I'm building for legacy. one go around and talk about he have a lineal title, something that's make-believe and fake. He come around and even have events that go 12 rounds with no belt on him but the one that holds his pants up now.
Meanwhile, the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, predicted he would win by knockout in 2 rounds, and he added that he's well aware of Wilder's power.
If I'm stupid enough to get hit by that big stupid right hand, then I deserve knocking out. And it will knock anybody out. As we saw, he hit me with it twice, and bam, I hit the floor twice. But it's not how you hit the floor. It's how you get back up and respond. And he knows he ain't messing with no quitter, no here. I'm a fighting man. And the late, great Brendan Ingle once said, to beat Tyson Fury, you have to nail him to the canvas. And that's what this little skinny legged super noodle will have to do. Nail me to the canvas. And if he can't do that, I'm going to eat him up.
That's Tyson Fury describing WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder as a skinny legged super noodle at a news conference in Los Angeles. Them be fighting words! Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder will face each other again on February 22nd in Las Vegas. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. January 17th is the birthday of the late, great Muhammad Ali, the 3-time world heavyweight champion and one of the most celebrated sports figures of the 20th century. Ali died in 2016 at the age of 74. George Kalinske, the official photographer for Madison Square Garden, focused his lens on Ali during some key points of his career. We'll hear from Kalinske now in part 2 of Adams Phillips' look at the life and legacy of Muhammad Ali.
Most of the most famous Ali photographs were shot in public, either in the ring, training, sparring with the press, or showing off to the public. Muhammad Ali was a fascinating subject, says Kalinske, because everything he did radiated charisma.
Whenever you walked down the street with Muhammad Ali, walked into a building, into a lobby, whenever you walked into an area where there were a lot of people, everybody sort of gawked at him as if, wow, that's Muhammad Ali. How many people in this world have that charisma that he had?
Ali often projected an image of barely contained masculine rage. This was publicity gold. But Kalinske says Ali was actually the gentlest man he ever knew.
Not many people know, unless you were speaking to him in private, that he really spoke in private in a whisper.
In 1967, the United States was deeply ensnared in the Vietnam War. It was a brutal conflict which sharply divided the American public. Muhammad Ali was one of hundreds of thousands of young American men who were drafted. He refused to serve, citing the Quran's injunction not to fight in Christian wars. Further alienating himself from the white establishment, he told reporters he had no problem with the communist Viet Cong he'd be expected to kill.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality, raped and killed my mother and father. How can I shoot them poor people? I would just take me to jail.
According to Jeffrey Sammons, that's just what the government set out to do.
He's convicted of draft evasion, fined $10,000, and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Of course, there are appeals, but at the same time, the boxing authorities are also acting. They're removing his boxing license, stripping him of his heavyweight title, and his passport is revoked, so he cannot box anywhere. He can't box here, and he can't leave the country to box somewhere outside of the United States.
Ali then took to the college lecture circuit, where he got a sympathetic audience among students who also opposed the war, during what would otherwise have been the heart of his stellar boxing career.
So it's from 67 to 70 that he's not able to box and earn a living. He said, I understand it. I'm standing up for principle. You know, I can't sell myself out.
It took a lot of guts to do that, right?
Oh, absolutely. On one hand, where all of this hurt his boxing career, it made him into a legendary figure. It made him into a transcendent figure. And I maintain that that's when he really becomes the people's champ.
At the start of 1967, Muhammad Ali was the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world and at the height of his fame and adulation. Indeed, many boxing fans and celebrity watchers had come to agree with Ali's brash insistence that he really was the greatest.
This is the legend of Muhammad Ali, the most popular fighter there ever will be. Ali fights great. He's got speed and endurance. If you sign to fight him, increase your insurance.
Ali had courted controversy, even condemnation, back in 1964, when following his defeat of heavyweight champion Sonny Liston, he converted to Islam and changed his name from Cassius Clay, what he called his slave name, to Muhammad Ali. But his greatest challenge with the establishment came in April of 1967, when he refused to join the American Armed Forces and go fight in Vietnam. The war was dividing the nation, and many supporters of the war reviled him as unpatriotic, a bum, and far worse for his refusal to serve. Ali was convicted of draft evasion, fined $10,000, and sentenced to 5 years in prison, which he was able to put off while appealing the decision. His passport was confiscated. Even worse for his career, the State Boxing Commission stripped Ali of his crown and revoked his boxing license. But for him, the principle at stake outweighed the glories of the ring. Ali spent the next 3 years appealing his conviction and speaking on college campuses to students who also opposed the Vietnam War and to some students who supported the war. But in 1970, Muhammad Ali found the loophole that would get him back into competition. There was no state boxing bureaucracy in the southern state of Georgia, so Ali challenged Jerry Quarry, a powerful white boxer, to fight him there. New York University historian Jeffrey Salmon says the Ali-Quarry fight packed a powerful symbolic punch. It was the stormy civil rights era, and many blacks and whites saw the contest as a showdown between the races.
Remember, Georgia's governor is Lester Maddox, who is this staunch segregationist, is known for running black people out of his restaurant with a pickaxe. But there was a very powerful black state senator, Leroy Johnson, who told Maddox that this would be in his best interest to allow this fight to happen, and he agreed.
The fight took place in Atlanta, Georgia, on October 26, 1970. Ali trounced Quarry in 3 rounds.
All over, and rightly so, and not before its time.
The federal court overturned Ali's conviction as arbitrary and unreasonable. Ali was ready to regain his world heavyweight title by fighting Joe Frazier. Smokin' Joe had earned the heavyweight title in elimination bouts after Ali's belt was stripped from him. The Ali-Frazier fight was touted as the fight of the century. It would determine which of those two undefeated champs could claim the belt. True to form, Ali played to reporters by taunting and insulting Frazier. Here's one example among many.
Joe Frazier is so ugly, his face should be donated to the Bureau of Wildlife.
Many thought Ali was angry at Joe Frazier, but that wasn't true in the opinion of Madison Square Garden photographer George Kolinsky. Kolinsky was a trusted friend who snapped photos of the fighter in public and behind the scenes for nearly 50 years. Many of those pictures are now on exhibit at the New York Historical Society.
When he talked about Joe Frazier, what he was really doing is being the showman, the performer, the entertainer to promote the fight. He said, if I sold tickets, then I did my work.
Prior to the fight, Kolinsky shot several roles of Ali and Frazier in Frazier's Philadelphia gym. In a first, Kolinsky asked them to put their heads together and to lock eyes in an attitude of barely contained fury. Then came the sparring.
And Joe hits Ali so hard in the stomach that Ali actually went down, and I couldn't believe this, that here I have my own fight going on with them. I start to help Muhammad Ali up, and he's looking at Joe Frazier, and he said, you son of a gun can really punch. And Joe Frazier looks at Ali, and he said, that's the way it's going to be the night of the fight. You're going down.
Indeed, Ali lost the so-called fight of the century marquee matchup in 15 rounds. It was the first defeat of his professional career. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Thanks, Adam. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcast. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com. VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Our Voice of America listeners can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Louisiana State University, or LSU, which captured the national championship in American-style college football on Monday night. The AP's Mark Myers reports from New Orleans, Louisiana.
LSU completed a perfect season by beating Clemson 42-25 in the championship game. Joe Burrow threw for 463 yards and 5 touchdowns, and the Heisman-winning quarterback also ran for a score as the Tigers end up 15-0.
What we did tonight can't be taken away from us. I don't know about the whole hero thing, but I know this national championship will be remembered for a long time in Louisiana. To do it in New Orleans is even more special.
Thad Moss and Jamar Chase each had 2 touchdown catches. Chase finished with 221 receiving yards.
I know the Saints couldn't do it, so I'm glad we got the job done. You know, shout out to the Saints. I'm sorry, Drew Brees, that they went through that little tough loss. I mean, I actually probably know how that feels. So it's a big accomplishment for LSU, man. Put that banner up. I can't wait to see that banner when we get back to school.
Clemson, looking to repeat as national champs, had its 29-game winning streak stopped. Mark Myers, New Orleans.
Thanks, Mark. Monday night's title game in New Orleans was a battle of Tigers. LSU sports teams are nicknamed the Tigers, and so are the sports teams at Clemson. But on Monday night, those Tigers from LSU had the biggest claws. This was LSU's 4th national title in college football, with its previous trophies in 1958, 2003, and 2007. One alumnus of LSU, who I'm sure was rooting for the national champion Tigers, was that big basketball Hall of Famer Shaquille O'Neal. Big Shaq proudly wore those LSU uniforms back in his college days, so I'm sure he was cheering on Joe Burrows and that great performance he had on Monday night. If you check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page, you'll see Novak Djokovic lifting the inaugural ATP Cup trophy with his Serbian teammates. If you tuned in to Monday's show, it began with a report from Craig Gabriel in Sydney, the Olympic city of Sydney, and it shows Djokovic and his teammates. We heard from them in Craig's report. So check out the Facebook page, facebook.com/VOA Sunny, for a good look at that ATP Cup trophy. And that wraps up the January 14th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Aiden Utko. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sunny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Get it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, slavery, racism, and colonialism fueled the emergence of Pan-Africanism. Reflections on the significance of Pan-Africanism on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
The 62nd annual Grammy Awards show is coming up. To celebrate, Border Crossings will play songs from the winners of the 2019 American Music Awards to refresh you on some of last year's best tracks. Tune in to hear from your favorite artists like Post Malone, BTS, and Taylor Swift, January 23rd on The Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
In 1929, Edwin Hubble, astronomer and namesake of the famous Space Telescope, provided evidence that the universe was expanding. To determine the rate of expansion, Hubble came up with a unit of measurement called the Hubble constant. Initially, Hubble estimated the universe was expanding at a rate of 500 kilometers per second per megaparsec. A megaparsec is equal to about 3.26 million light years. Over the years, astronomers have lowered estimates of the Hubble constant down to between 50 and 100 kilometers per megaparsec. Astrophysicists from Clemson University recently used new techniques and data from the Fermi Gamma Ray Space Telescope and the Imaging Atmospheric Cherenkov Telescopes to determine the Hubble constant. They estimate the universe is expanding at a rate of nearly 67.5 kilometers per second per megaparsec. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.